Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sullivan. With me, as always, there he is, the one and only Kevin Trussler. Kevin, say what up to the people.
What's going on, people? I'm fresh, relaxed, you know, no stress whatsoever, Jeff. That's how playoff hockey should be.
It's because no stress, because you don't have the black and gold to stare at and watch and be edge of your seat while they do something stupid, like we've seen in a couple of the playoff games, getting leads, giving up leads, things like that. But with that being said, I'd be remiss if we don't quickly just get your thoughts on our last episode with Larry Robbins from Longwood Hockey. A lot of great feedback on social media, a lot of great ideas and thoughts around what Florida hockey could be. Just, you know, in a really short kind of thought, Kevin, what did you take away from that episode that excites you about Florida hockey?
Well, the takeaway is genuine, right? He's been there, done that, had success in other markets. And to me, there's no reason why that the way they did business up in New Jersey and Chicago, that it can't work here. You know, I think it's going to open the eyes of a lot of players and locations, and hopefully that is going to grow the game, because I thought he was very genuine. I think the message was extremely, you know, it was well spoken, put together, and, you know, he's doing it for the right reasons. So, no, definitely interested to see what takes place over the next year. We always know that the first year, there's always going to be some hiccups and learning curves, so to speak. But, you know, overall, I thought the heart's in the right direction, and it's going to be good for the state of hockey, for the state of Florida. And hockey.
I agree. And I've seen a lot of comments around, you know, is there enough players to sustain? And, you know, why do you need to jump? They're just letters. And we, to some extent, agree with that general theme, right? You don't need to chase the letters. However, I think we both agree that what is lacking is the availability of that next level within the state, right? You can be really good AA and put really good AA teams together. And we've seen that happen. But to have that next level that is getting, let's be honest, unless you have three A's at the end of your age group, once you leave the state of Florida and go play in the bigger picture of hockey at the older age groups, 10, yeah. 12, yes, there's a development piece there. Maybe there is different access to different coaches or whatever. But once you get 14s, 16s especially, and 18s, I mean, there, if you look at NAHL tenders, NCDC tenders, some of those kids come directly out of U18 AAA programs in other markets. They don't come out of U18 AA programs. So that is where that extra letter does matter, because of the exposure, because of the availability. And I think that's where my excitement is about his concept, is if it works, and I think it will with the right people involved, and he is one of them, it will give those players at the higher age groups a place to stay in Florida, be competitive, and you have to start somewhere. And if you can grow it, then fast forward 10 years, let's have this conversation. I bet you it's a whole different one. 23 million people in this state, roughly 8,000 USA Hockey registrants under the age of 18. According to USA Hockey, 10% of that number, 10 to 15, is your level for AAA, not 25, to his point, right? So I buy into all that, and I think he's onto something.
Yeah, and it gives, you know, kids in the bordering states an opportunity to go and play as well, right? Like, you know, if you're in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, you know, if you don't want to go up north to the Northeast, to know that there's an opportunity with a club that's down here locally in Florida, like, it's just another option. You know, we're thinking that everyone wants to migrate to the North, Northeast, Midwest, but, you know, Florida is a pretty good destination location to play hockey. And, you know, last I checked, I think the NHL has had some success in the Sunshine State over the past 5 years or even longer. So, no, excited to see what it brings. It just gives up more opportunities. And, you know, if the success is there, I'd like to think that there's going to be more success in other markets aside from, you know, down in the south, southeast.
I agree completely. So, yeah, if you haven't checked that episode out, go check out episode 35. Larry Robbins, CEO of Longwood Hockey, talks a lot of good AAA stuff. Also, little plug, if you're watching us, you can see it on my head. Kevin, let's be honest, I just haven't driven them to your house yet. Your stash is here. But if you're not watching and you're listening to us, go check out our socials. We're calling it the Greasy Pigeon Podcast OG hat. We've got our first batch of branded merch, white golf hat, rope style. My kid hasn't taken it off his head since I gave it to him, so he's worn it to the golf course. He's worn it out. Great fit, great hat. We don't have a site and like a link to buy them yet, but we can get them for you. If you want them, send me a DM, hit us up. We'll work out something through Venmo. We'll get you some hats. spread the greasy pigeon love around. It's a pretty good looking hat, if I do say so myself.
Absolutely. Get greasy, everyone. Let's go. That's right.
So, Kev, speaking of greasy, we get the luxury of having this conversation on the 21st of April. Playoffs started in the NHL. And just a real quick before our guest joins us here, a few minute conversation. What is your takeaway? Any surprises, good or bad, that you've seen in the first couple of days of the playoffs?
I think the biggest surprise, honestly, is Dallas, right? They're coming in on a terrible stretch of losses. And, you know, you lose on home ice. They say you don't lose until you lose on home ice. And Colorado seems to be getting healthier by the day. And there was a message out there that Landon Scott could be dressed and playing in game two, which would be unbelievable. Talk about a pickup for the Avalanche, getting their captain back after two seasons of being on the shelf. So I'm interested to see how Dallas definitely responds to that. You know, the Winnipeg-St. Louis match on Saturday, I think it was everything it was built up to be. It was back and forth. You know, St. Louis jumped out to a quick lead and Winnipeg came back and, you know, won it in the final minutes of the game. So I picked that one to go 6 or 7. I'm still leaning towards St. Louis just with how they played over the last half of the season. But, you know, again, Winnipeg won and you're not behind until you lose on home ice. Toronto, to me, looked dominant last night. You know, their power play's clicking. They've got the big guns that are firing on all cylinders in that one. And it's good to see because, you know, you get the big boys going early and, you know, confidence only builds from there. But that Ottawa team, they're playing with house money. They haven't been in the playoffs in a long time. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of grit and fight. The Battle of Florida doesn't start until tomorrow, which is pretty nuts considering that a couple teams will have a couple games under their belt. Playoff hockey, first round playoff hockey, to me, you can't beat it. The pace is that much quicker. The fans are that much amped up. I know the stress level typically when the bees are in it, it goes through the roof. But like I said, I'm relaxed in this spring of 2025. And thanks, Don. And Cam for making that happen, you know.
But no, there's nothing left to talk about. You hit all of them, and you kind of stole my thunder on the Toronto series. I will say I am interested to watch Edmonton, LA again for I believe it's the fifth year in a row that they're together in the opening round. I believe like they just run into each other all the time, and LA's got their number, and that's one of those teams that Edmonton has a hard time getting through.
Well, they have their number more so in the regular season, but LA hasn't beaten Edmonton since like 88, which was a stat in the playoffs, which
gotcha.
To me was an eye opener because you're right. I mean, they seem to be playing every year, and you would think, you know, going back to when LA won those cups, you got to remember Edmonton wasn't in the playoffs then. So I'm with you. That one is an intriguing one. LA has home ice as well. And Edmonton they've got some heavy hitters that are out of the lineup for game one. So we shall see. I think the Washington-Montreal series is also one that looks pretty good. So, you know, could be an upset there. We'll see what Montreal brings to the table. And again, goaltending is going to be key in everything and special teams. I think we've seen that in the first games that have been played. The teams that have been able to weather the storm on special teams have done pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, Kev, thank you for correcting me. You're right. Hey, mind's eye tells me something different than the fact show, but it's the fourth year in a row, not fifth. So I misspoke there. For the fourth year in a row, they're meeting up in the first round. And other than 21, where they went to 7, Edmonton's 1-7, and 6, and in 5. So they're not giving them the run. I just feel like the Kings are always upsetting somebody. They're always beating somebody they shouldn't. And for some reason, I thought that was Edmonton, but clearly the stats don't point that out. Edmonton has actually been pretty dominant, 36-18 all time against the Kings in the playoffs. So maybe that's not. I actually took the Kings in that series over Edmonton. I'm still, you know how I feel about Edmonton goaltending. Go back and listen to last year's shows. Not a fan of the guy in net in Edmonton or the whole setup that they have. I just don't have confidence in there, right? So I think that's going to be a good one to watch. I agree with you. St. Louis and Winnipeg, I'll be glued to my TV on those games. Those seem to be super exciting. Back to the East, though, I will tell you, I was shocked. And I don't watch Toronto like you do, right? With the fandom in your family and your house.
Yep.
I was shocked at how good. That's the best I've seen Toronto look in the playoffs. Now, they're not playing the Boston Bruins, and that is part of it. So, again, different sweater across the ice, different jersey on the other side of the ice. They're not in their own heads. They don't have that veil, that cloak over them that's knocking them down. So I actually picked Ottawa. To be honest with you, I picked Ottawa 1-7 in that series because I thought that Ottawa's goaltending, Elmark, would show up and stand up and be better than the Toronto goaltending, right?
Solars.
I thought he'd be better than him. Last night did not show that. Now, to be clear, you can't let Nylander walk on his forehand to the hash mark on a 5-on-3 and just beat your goalie, high blocker every time he turns around. So they got to tighten that up. They got to tighten the penalties up. 18 players on Ottawa, first ever playoff game. A lot of guys are getting their feet wet in that moment, which is a big moment in Toronto. And if Toronto keeps playing that way, my pick of the East may be in trouble.
Yeah, no, I think the pieces that Toronto picked up at the deadline, we've always said that defense and goaltending has been a challenge for them over the years. And I think they've shored that up this year. Marner is obviously playing for a contract as well. And for him to get on the score sheet with a couple of points was huge for his confidence, I'm sure. You know, as long as they stay out of the media and the fishbowl that is Toronto media, the way they played last night, they look extremely well. But, you know, Ottawa's a young and resilient team. I'm sure they'll get the jitters out, and game two is going to be a little bit closer than what game one was. But, you know, that Marner or the Nylander goal, I mean, what do you do, right? You got Nylander or you have Matthews for a one-timer, and the D, he just looked like he was in no man's land. And, you know, pick one, I guess, and try to take away one option. And you know, in that case, I think he was playing more towards the pass with Matthews, and Allmark was, that's a tough spot for a goalie to be in, specifically when you're in grade A scoring chances at the top of the circles, and Nylander put it home. And Allmark is interesting though, right? We obviously love Allmark and what he did for the Bees, but his numbers in playoffs are really not that great with a young team, and who knows what's going to happen there. But hopefully you can shake it off. And you know, look, you want all these series to go late because it just makes it that much more exciting.
Yeah, exactly. So before our guest joins us here in just a minute, Kev, well, who is your pick out of the East and who is your pick out of the West, and who do you got winning the whole thing?
So I'm going to sound like a homer, but I'm a true believer in what the Leafs have done this year. If they can come out of this Ottawa series relatively healthy and, you know, not getting the cart before the horse, I think Tampa and Florida is going to go 7. Montreal, Washington, I'm not sure what's going to happen there. And Carolina, New Jersey, I think that's the easier bottom bracket. But again, I think with what the Leafs have done, with the coach that they have, you know, I'm a big Berube fan. He broke our hearts in 18 with St. Louis. Again, if the media can just stay out of it and just enjoy the ride and pump the tires instead of deflating them up there, good things can happen. In the West, it's interesting. St. Louis I like, Colorado I like, and Vegas I like. Those would be the three that that I think can get it done.
Give me one.
We're gonna go Colorado. I'm gonna say Colorado. Boy. Colorado Leafs in the final.
And who's taking it home?
Well, more to come on that one.
Fence sitter, you are.
We're gonna go Leafs, you know, for the old man.
So you agree with me. I've got Colorado coming out of the West. I have Florida coming out of the East. I think they get past Tampa, and then I'm not sold on Washington. They would be the wild card for me. If they can continue to produce when all the games are hard and all the games matter and they put a full effort on the ice, then they may upset my bracket because I just don't think they have the pedigree, which is funny to say, but I don't think they have the pedigree to go through that field to get to the finals, right? So I've got Florida coming out of the East. I got Colorado coming out of the West. 1996 all over again in my bracket. And I think Colorado does do it again. I don't think they'll sweep like they did 96, but I think McKinnon, if Landeskog can come back healthy, you've got Makar back there. When they are on all cylinders, you cannot compete with them, I don't believe. And they are fast. And the West is a different game. And the East is now, if it's Colorado, Toronto, like you said, and Toronto's still playing the way they played last night, that's going to be a fast series, right? And they'll be, that'll be skill based. It'll be one of the lowest hitting series of all time in the Stanley Cup finals. It'll be like watching Euro hockey out there. Like, I'm going to be dippy doing around each other. Like, it'll be a totally different game. But I think it's going to be an interesting path to get there. But I'm also going to be upside down because I got Ottawa and I've got, I've got the Canadiens. Actually, I believe it. I have to go check my brackets. I think I took the Canadiens to beat Washington in the first round.
You know what? I've got them going past Washington too. You know, again, that is going to be all about momentum. If they can steal a game in Washington, you're playing with house money. You're playing with house money as it is right now. You got nothing to lose. So, we've seen it before, 8 versus 1. That matchup, there's upsets that happen all the time with that. So it'll be interesting on that one. Colorado, I'm with you. I think the Leafs in Colorado, when you look at both teams as far as goaltending goes, they've got both a 1A and a 1B. And that to me is huge because if one guy falters, you've got another one that you can go to. So, although Colorado's tender looked really good on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting first round for sure. Like you said, some of the best hockey we'll see all playoffs, and then it'll just keep going. We'll touch base a little bit here and there throughout the playoffs, Kev, but real good stuff, good insight. The way too early predictions based on one game, throwing my brackets out the window just because Toronto had a good outing. They could get their ass kicked tomorrow and I'm back in it. So you never know how it all plays out.
Yeah, if you are looking for an edge, just go completely opposite to what we just said.
Whatever we said, if you put the Zizic on the other side, you probably make out better than us. Trust me. But Kev, good stuff there. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our guest, if you're active on Florida social media, you have seen the Panda referee. We're going to talk to the Panda in the nest. The first time we've had a Panda in the nest since we started the show, but we're going to get into some referee side, some rules, just kind of some info and hopefully a few stories with David when we come back next in the nest. Welcome back, everybody. Kevin, our guest has joined us in the nest, and we are super thrilled and happy to have him here. David Benmoka, who many of you in Florida know as the Panda referee, ref youth games all over Florida, does some roller refing, and now one of his biggest things he really likes to get into, and he's been doing for a while, and some of our players, Kevin, have trained with him, but he tries to develop, isn't try, he does teach and develop what hopefully is the next generation of superstar referees. So, David, welcome to the Greasy Pigeon Podcast, man. Thanks for joining us in the nest.
It's my honor. Thank you so much for having me. This is a great platform to learn about what you guys are doing, but also I'll let you guys know what I'm doing. So,
absolutely. No, man, glad you're here. So, just want to start really basic, bud. What is your hockey background? How did you fall in love with the sport? And then how did that turn into reffing?
Yeah, so my passion started, as a young age, very curious about the rules. I was never someone that argued much or spoke to refs much, but I did really enjoy some of the candor going back and forth whenever, I was like, hey, did I really get them that bad? Or, so I really, one of the things that really drew me to it, to officiating, I didn't even start at a young age. It was just a curiosity of like, I was always a player that played on the edge, but I wouldn't say much to the refs. And I think as that grew on, as you play higher level hockey, you start to see the same refs and you start to develop those relationships. But I didn't get into it until after college. My mother kind of reached out, was like, hey, like job searching for the first year hasn't gone so great. So let's get you in there and see if you like it. And without, surprise, it's kind of the love that found me back, because after playing college hockey, Division III at Manhattanville College, the way it ended due to injuries, it was very sour. And officiating brought me back to life and brought me within the community again.
No, I've always said, there can't be a game if you don't have officials. Otherwise, it's just a pickup game, right? Which leads to my next question. Like, do you find that that there'd been a shortage in refereeing, here in Florida and across the U.S.? We're hearing in baseball that the way parents and coaches act towards officials, it's making people not even want to do the sport, which is a shame because, again, it goes back to you don't have a true game unless you have officials of the sports. What are you seeing over the years as far as participation with the youth and even some of the old timers? Are they getting out of it sooner than later?
I think a lot of old timers have been doing it for such a long time, relied on them, and there hasn't been that second wave come through. But I think there have been challenges on both sides. You have the rinks that have associations that, as a referee, once you sign up with USA Hockey, you become part of that association, then you'll get scheduled games within there. There's a lack of confidence that kids are going to follow through, so there's less of an emphasis of, hey, let's prioritize this kid and officiating. But on the other side, I think there's also this this mindset of like, you know, this is an easy job and it's easy to get into and you can make a lot of money. And it is certainly rewarding, but I don't think that's the passion that keeps people in it for the long haul, especially when they're being criticized. And it takes a certain level of presence, a certain level of experience and confidence, if you will, to then get to that level where you can have a thick skin. Thick skin doesn't grow overnight. And so, you know, I would say the first 3-4 years is what it takes to grow thick skin. How do we give these kids opportunities to get training, to get training often and at affordable cost, hopefully free. And then from there, how do we prioritize them and get them in paid games? Because now we're rewarding them for their loyalty and for their commitment versus, okay, well, this kid thinks he can get in right away. And then our association's like, well, that's not going to happen. You have to earn your stripes. And then the kid's like, well, this isn't really worth it. I'm distracted by high school and SATs and college and, you know, playing travel, playing high school, and just so many things going on. And where I see the most curiosity is ages 10 through 13. Then the state law, child labor law, state of Florida is 14 years old. So that's kind of when high school starts and all these distractions start. So, you know, a lot of curiosity early on, but not a lot of opportunities for these kids to have a place to go. So your first question is, do we have enough officials in the state of Florida? We do. We just don't have a structure system of where that education is coming from. And no one wants to work with anyone who started from ground zero. Everyone is so excited to charge money for these ref camps that or free opportunities that USA Hockey provides, but you've got to at least be, you know, a couple of years in. And but that's not where the transition is. The transition is from zero to, you know, year four, where you can build that thick skin and you say, hey, I like it enough that when people disagree, I'm still willing to stick with it. And that right there. So when it comes to how do we find good referees, it's really, we have a lack of quality officials because there's a lack of people that want to get better at officiating. Because once you start getting games, you're over 18, you're doing adult league, you're not going to develop any ref skills in adult league. There's a lot of things that happen that will never happen in a real game. So once you start getting paid, you say, hey, I know what I'm doing. I'm getting paid. And so I don't need to get better. I'm comfortable with where I am. And, you know, we're looking for people who want to take pride in their officiating, who want to consistently get better, consistently learn the rules and understand how to apply them as the level of hockey gets faster.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And before we get into some of the things that most of us want to know, rule changes and how you see things and calls on the ice and things like that, I do want to dive into a little deeper on what you're talking about right now. And that's the development piece. And specifically, I want you to explain to the Florida listening audience and others that are listening across the country and to be honest, in some other countries, Kevin, believe it or not, on what you do for the future referees of the area, right? The Tampa area and the Florida area. How do you get that education to them? What are some of the things you're doing? What are some of the things you're seeing? Like, just get into who the Panda Ref is and what that really means to you with the reffing community.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you kind of segmenting that into that. The Panda Referee is a character that I thought about. How do we rebrand how people look at referees? And black and white creature, similar to a zebra. But I really, at the time when I created this Panda Referee character, it was the height of Kung Fu Panda, the movie, and a lot of pop culture references. I wanted it to be a friendly encounter. I wanted it to be a friendly relationship between players and coaches and referees. So I want referees to feel included into the community and not ostracized. So that's kind of where we started with that. And then when I was early on, it was all about how do I use this platform to then find people who want to be a part of officiating? So the way we looked at rebranding it is, okay, well, let's see what we can do for the community. And so there's a mini rink in Tampa where all the, it's called Power Pole Arena, and it's a mini rink. And we have an opportunity to go in there and train referees from ages 10 years old to 18 years old, even older. We even had some 40-year-olds come out there with us. And the thought process is, let's get them free training. Let me use my time out there with them. And I shadow them. I work with them. We focus on positioning. We focus on blowing the whistle and we focus on presence. We focus on confidence, learning how to do the job and put them out there. See if that's even an interest to them. We don't charge the parents anything because hockey is expensive enough sport. So our focus is let's get them out there. Let's see if they like it. And if it's something that they're good at and they want to continue, then you know, they'll have paid opportunities along the way. So we do our best to try to transition them. And it all starts with the ground level. It all starts with like creating a safe environment for them to make mistakes and then feel like they can gain feedback and make adjustments along the way. And then from there, their confidence will grow. But a lot of times officials get out there, do paid games, get paid for it. They do a good job or a bad job. But when people yell at them, it's fight or flight mode. They either want to yell profanity back or they want to run away as fast as they can. And so how do we keep officials in it longer is giving them the tools to be a better communicator. And from there, they're going to then realize how that can transition to being a better communicator in business and your relationships at home. So I think these are just like really great life skills that will then lead on to bigger and better things. But we try to create an opportunity where it's free and it's accessible. And then from there, just see what can happen when younger kids are prioritized and the people who are passionate about it are the ones that are hitting the ice more often than the other ones.
Well, if you ever need that thick skin training, don't be afraid to call Kevin. He'll gladly stand up on the bench with one leg on the wall and yell at the 10-year-old out there. He has no problem doing that from the bench, right, Kevin?
No profanities. No profanities. We keep it PG. No, I mean, it's so true. I mean, it's life skills right there that it's not if, it's when you're going to go through a tough time and someone's going to, we're human, we're emotion. Emotions can get the best of us at times, whether it in the workplace, whether at that 11 p.m. beer league game where, you think you're Gretzky and clearly you're not. But it's important to know how to handle that on both ends. With growing the game being in the Tampa Bay area, have any of the organizations reached out to you at all, David? As far as I've always felt it's important as a coach growing up that, hey, players, you do not say anything to the referee. That's the coach's job. And, I've developed great relationships with a lot of the local referees over the years when I was coaching, because again, I respect what is done out there. And I'm not going to be able to see what you see from your angle. There's always going to be, my point of view versus your point of view. And I think no matter what, it's if you go at it in a healthy way, not just yelling, that's going to get you. It's going to get you better opportunities, better relationships. But going back with the organizations in the Tampa Bay area, have you ever had any of the hockey directors reach out to you and have them talk to some of the teams or the coaches that are out there?
Yeah, actually, I had the Florida Alliance, I believe 2010 Northern team reach out to me, and that was a great opportunity. I was able to do a PowerPoint presentation via Zoom. We spoke all in length about the body checking rules and what to expect as a first year going into body checking. I think one of the things people really, the toughest part of the transition is you'll see how kids react to body checking their first 20 games, or then watch them their last 20 games. And just not being afraid, intimidated by a fast game with players coming into body check, you understanding time and space and understanding how to protect yourself and understanding how to brace for that impact. And so understanding that the first 5 minutes are always going to be the most crazy and chaotic. And you have to, once you get past that, then it's a game of like, all right, now let's put the puck in the net. Let's move the puck. Let's move our feet. Let's get to the front of the net. Let's look for rebounds. And so I think once the initial fear of every 5 minutes of the first 20 games becoming this chaotic, allowing that to settle down, even as parents, as you're watching this happen and your kid is like, oh my God, fight or flight mode, getting them to settle their nerves down early in the game, get a couple of shifts in, realize that people are going to try to take your heads off. But if they keep doing that, then you're going to move the puck faster and your team's going to get ahead on the scoreboard. So those are some of the things that we brought up. We also talked at length about the new rule about neck lacerations being a requirement and how people are cheating. So I think you can't talk officiating if you're not going to talk about how to break the rules and what's on the line of the rules and understand where's a referee's judgment starts and how far that they can go based on the wording of the rules, the actual rhetoric. So I think if a referee is different because they interpret things differently, and that's okay. But I think also as a player, understanding where those lines and those boundaries are is really, really important to understanding how to do things legally, but also try to be as comfortable. I know with the neck guards, it can be a little discomforting. So, but understanding that, like, you're not breaking the rules enough to get called for a penalty, as long as you understand where those boundaries lie.
No, I think that's really good to get that information out there. And since you broke into the rules, we're just going to kick the door down the rest of the way and get right into rules as we speak. So let's start with the hitting rule, because there's been a lot of conversation just in our show prep today. We talked about the hitting rules, and really it's, I called it the nuances of the hitting rule, because if you believe what USA Hockey said, and David, please get into this a little deeper. Every, I think you said 4 years is the number. They redo a lot of their rules, or they review their rules. They make changes, and then the book stays stagnant for 4 years and they do it again. 4 years ago was when the hitting rule, for all intents and purposes, changed. And USA Hockey says it never changed. They just put an emphasis on calling the rule the way it was written. As if you were playing hockey 4 years ago in a checking age group, you didn't know game to game what was going to be a penalty and what wasn't, what was legal, what wasn't. It turned, at least in Florida, you go to other parts of the country, it didn't necessarily turn it on its head, right? So I want you to dive into that for us. There's really no question here, David, other than, can you just kind of get into the hitting one? Because I think for a lot of parents, like you said, the transition into 14U and then even some 16U kids that maybe are coming out of rec or played an A level that are playing double A now, the game gets more intense. It gets more physical. Some kids are experiencing hitting differently or at a higher level. Can you just really just deep dive into that one topic for right now? And then I definitely want to get into what else is coming with the rule changes.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as the words written in the rule book, it used to be called body contact and body checking. Now that's where a lot of people got blurred. Body this, body that. They couldn't contact checking. I don't know. It's all the same. Did they collide? Yes, they collided. Okay, well, that's contact. That's checking. All right. So the point of what they were trying to do back then was body contact was supposed to be either incidental contact or necessary contact, such as angling a player, getting in front of them, gaining position, making contact. And if you rub a player out and they fall, we weren't going to call that. That was body contact. We assumed that there's going to be some sort of contact involved when you're trying to remove the puck from another player. Now, where that got blurred was some of these were not as clean, and certain refs were allowing that to go on. And there was disagreements with coaches and players on, like, what do we think, or referees, like, how much was that, too much contact? And so what I like to do is I like to simplify it for the viewers on this podcast and the listeners here, and just say, you know, what's necessary to remove a player from that, and understand that hockey is not a game of aggression. It's a game of controlled aggression. And the controlled part is, you know, if you are going to angle a player, that you're not going to come at a fast speed and close in and pin them on the boards and rub off and finish that hit. There is that level of skating to that space, gaining that position, then making that contact, but it's in a controlled manner and it's not all at once. And so you are slowing down, you're changing speeds. There's a skill set to this. And so different referees had different versions of that skill set. So what they did was they said, you know, we're not going to call it body check and body contact. They're going to call it competitive contact, meaning players are skating to the puck and they're making contact that is a competitive play on the puck. And so they made puck the central theme. And if there's no puck play, then there's no play. And not no play, sorry, there's no contact. There's no body checking. There's no collisions there. So that's really, you know, and I think the main understanding is that USA Hockey is an insurance company. They're looking at liability, and they have to insure so many people around the country. So once we look at that, like, why are they doing this? Are they taking hitting out of the game? No, they want players to be more in control of their, you know, create a more controlled environment, and they want it to be a controlled aggression. They don't want it to be hostile aggression. And so understanding that from their perspective of what they're looking for, they're looking for less liability every year. Every time they change the rules, they're looking for less liability. So once you start with that mindset and you work to, like, what kind of rules are they going to do to, you know, they want more skill, they want less hitting, they want, you know, but it's not necessarily less hitting. If it's a physical game, it's a physical game, as long as it's done cleanly. And so the old school term of finish your check used to mean you got 2-3 seconds after they released the puck. You know, that did contribute to a lot of penalties. I do remember that as a young man and getting some, you know, unnecessary injuries. I think it also follows, you know, for coaches too. Coaches need to be able to coach to that level. So yes, you can change the rules, but you know, is the play going to change? Not necessarily. If the coaching's not there, if the ability to teach these skills are not there, there is going to be hostile aggression. And so referees just have to understand like where they need to lay down the line in the sand and what they're willing to allow. Usually when we have faster hockey, I don't want to say good hockey, bad hockey. When we have faster hockey, usually there's more control or you can let them play a little bit more. We've talked about the U14, U16, U18 level. To like, hey, this is how aggressive you can play. But I'm going to be a lot more blunt with an 18-year-old than I am with a 14-year-old. I understand that the 14-year-old may not understand what, you know, if coach actually wanted them to call a timeout or not. So I'll check with the coach, things like that. But at the U16 level, I think that's where captains and assistant captains can be implemented and those roles can be fulfilled to the responsibility that they deserve. You know, I would say that the communication between the players and coaches and those relationships at those ages, dependent on where they are cognitively, is kind of how I make judgments on penalties and the level of aggressiveness. I don't want to just say body checking because sometimes there's a lot more advanced things like how do you move a guy in front of the net? Okay, well, cross checking. Well, you can't cross check him. All right, so then what can I do? Understanding that a lot of the stuff is positionally, but then if they have the proper technique, I'm not calling that. But I'm voicing that out. I said, hey guys, keep it at the hips, push and shove, whatever. Make sure you're not extending your arms and throwing a guy on the ground. Listen, you guys can fight for space legally and letting them know what I want before it gets to a point where, you know, too late.
Yeah, you got to draw that line in the sand early, right? Not, you know, when that rule change came out for 4 years ago, growing up in the old school way of hockey, it made me really adjust my coaching strategy because really the form of hitting in hockey is to separate your opponent from the puck to gain possession from the puck. Scott Stevens, 5 Mississippis, blowing up Paul Kariya when he's not looking and the puck's in the other zone. Hey, that's great. But at the same time, Kariya wasn't looking when he got blasted. And I've since turned the page. The game has become so much faster, so much skilled. These kids are unbelievable that, you know, you got to respect your opponent because it's not if, it's when. You're going to be caught in a vulnerable situation. And how do you want your opponent to do you? You know, and I'm still all about the open ice hits, but like, you know, the hits to the head coming up high or just blowing up your opponent just to blow them up. You know, you've done a good job. I think that the league has done a good job with changing that. And, you know, you can still be physical. It's just got to be, like you said, in a controlled manner. With that being said, with you refereeing throughout the country, do you find that there's different styles of officiating in different parts of the country versus here in Florida, or is it pretty consistent?
The respect of the game is different amongst players in different parts of the country, which then in turn makes the officiating style different. How honest you can be with certain players, how, you know, like you said, the levels of respect of the game and the level of respect of your opponents is different. Minnesota, you know, I'm managing the game. I'm keeping everyone within the confines of the game, but I don't feel like I need to teach the game. Where in other parts of the country, I feel like I'm also teaching the game. I'm teaching them what the culture, what a hockey player should be and what they should do and how does a hockey player act and how do they, you know, there is this education of culture, not only as I'm officiating, but just like throughout all the games that you're doing, you know, you're hoping that you're building relationships with players. And I hope that every referee that does jump on the ice that sees that the value of their officiating, their ability to keep the game safe isn't in the number of penalties, but it's in fact, it's the level of respect that you have out there. And the better you get to know the players and the better they get to know you, the more respect. So when you say stop, they stop. That's ultimate respect and that's ultimate presence. And that's how a quality official gains that reputation, is that game after game, they stay consistent, they stay honest, and they go out there just doing their best. And if you're able to have those honest conversations, when the tough times come, game misconduct, match penalty, things like that, really ugly situations, potential injuries, you're able to go to that coach, that player, and give them the honest truth versus, you know, this is what I'm giving you and no explanation, skate away. Like, you know, people are entitled to disagree. It's just, it takes time to build that thick skin. And like I said, 3-4 years, you know, just to know when to engage and when not to, as a referee, but as a player, they're going to be emotional no matter what. And as a referee, if you hit that same emotional level, then no one's in control, or not really in control, but like no one's there to kind of guide us to a safe environment. And it takes more than just the referee, like I said, calling penalties to keep the game safe. It takes the participation of the players, the coaches, and even the parents to reinforce what's right and what's wrong, and to make sure that you're on the same page.
100%. And getting everyone on the same page means understanding the words written on the page. Panda Ref, what is new, high level? What are the important bullet points of the updated USA Hockey rulebook that parents and players can, and coaches, most importantly, coaches need to understand going into the 2025-2026 USA Hockey season?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So I think the first thing that we need to address is rule changes happen every 4 years. We're going to go into the year one of these new rules, 2025 to 2029. What's going to happen in the if you do have a rule, say, hey, I want to submit this to USA Hockey. I think this would be a good rule for everyone. So you would submit that in 2028, and in January of 2029, they will sit down with the USA Hockey Playing Rules Committee, and they will vote, and from there, they'll then set the rules again for the next August. These rules I'm about to state, these are August 1 rules 2025. That's the first day that these go into place. Some of these are just they're changing the language on some of it, but some of it are actually real implications and understanding what matters and how to differentiate these things. So linesman is now going to be lines person in the USA Hockey rulebook for whoever feels like that's a blurred line. And we have neck laceration protectors. So neck guards are going to be a requirement. That's going to be actually in the new rule book. And then we also have a bench minor for unsuccessful challenge of a mouthpiece. That's a good one, right? So if you think you're calling out a player on the other team and it is unsuccessful, then you are going to get a bench minor penalty.
I got to ask a question, David. In 9 years of coaching, that was one I never, ever on the other team ever would think of. But how often has that happened to you?
Never.
Okay.
But I'm willing to bet.
There's someone out there.
It will now. Someone's going to read this. Someone's going to watch this. Someone's going to listen to it. Someone's going to put it out there and say, I'm going to challenge that mouthpiece. So if it's clear or you don't believe it's a real mouthpiece, go ahead and make that challenge. Cannot have a clear mouthpiece, cannot have a piece of tape that you're chewing on. Okay, so this one, the kiddos, the TikTokers aren't going to like this one. So they are actually going to write into the rule book, no cameras and no microphones on the ice while a USA Hockey sanctioned game is being played. These are now going to be prohibited items. So sorry, TikTokers, hockey under USA Hockey rule will not have any mic'd up content. Yeah, luckily roller hockey, I have options there. So
nice.
USA Hockey, but unsanctioned events, scrimmages, tryouts. I mean, you can find opportunities. But here's the thing: anything that's USA Hockey, anything that's league run, for the most part, unless it's under AAU, I'd say. But I understand where they're going with that. And also, what I have noticed too, I would like to think I'm an influencer, but let's be real. Like, there's other influencers, there are hundreds of thousands, millions of followers. I have heard that from other people that influencers, such as Nasher, because he wears a camera on his head when he plays adult league, the rink has asked him not to wear it anymore because guys are taking runs at him just to get on social media. So there is a safety concern there, but
there's an easier way to get on camera.
Yeah, here you go. So no, I think there are situations I can see where people are trying to take advantage of that stuff. So, so that's one.
Go ahead. To clarify, when you say cameras, like the cameras on the outside of the glass filming, kids are actually wearing cameras.
Kids wearing cameras.
That's, okay,
is that's what they're saying? Yeah. And microphoned up as you're playing. So, but yeah, so that's gonna be.
I'm an old man. That's just
rules specifying refs under 18 must wear a neck piece, neck guard. Mandates game misconduct of abusive official after the game. So there's no. Hey, I'm just gonna give this guy to an extra penalty because he yelled at me. It's got to be a minimum game misconduct. If there's a physical abuse of a game official, there is a 24-hour period to report that. Delay of game for goalies, this is for goalies here, removes the mandatory, you know, if a player shoots out a puck out of play, there won't be a mandatory delay of game like there used to be. Whether or not intentional, not intentional.
Okay.
Some referees only called it if it was intentional. So that might be something new for some referees, but it takes away the mandate for them to actually call a delayed penalty, even if the goalie's just trying to clear the puck out of the zone. What else? Ooh, this is a spicy one. Icing the puck shorthanded. So if you're, if you're in the U15 age group, or above, so U15, U16, U17, U18, and for girls, U19, they are allowing the puck to be iced during shorthanded. So we're going back to that. Also, in the same situation with icing, if an official makes a mistake on an icing, calls it when he shouldn't have, they're going to bring that error, that bring that face off to center ice. So if there's an error on the official on an icing, they're going to bring it to center ice.
I thought that's where it always was, and David.
Is there any more? Yep, there's one more. No, that was the rule they took out. So
okay.
Anytime there was an error, it used to go to center ice. But then a couple of years ago, they changed it to last play. So wherever the puck was blown dead. So if I made a boo-boo and I blew the whistle on an ice and it wasn't supposed to be an icing, I have to almost kind of like penalize the team that I call, like wherever the puck was, they have to stay in their zone. So kind of unfair. So now they're going to bring it to center. Then refusal to start play. If a coach is saying, I don't like the officiating, you guys are terrible, my team won't play in the middle of the game. It used to be they would ask him, hey, like give him a warning. Hey, you have to do this or I have to suspend the games. Now they're just putting it into the rule book that they're going to have two warnings instead of one warning. So are you sure? Are you sure? Are you very, very sure? That's, I guess. That's,
are you very, those very are the rules. Sure?
I was hoping that they were going to. Well, because the coach gets a match penalty, so like he's done for 30 days. That's why it's like, are you sure you want this to happen?
I'm gonna tee it. Are you sad?
Yeah, you gotta give him three warnings next time they redo the rules. It's gonna be three warnings. They remove the automatic whistle for U15 and above. So now it's just delayed tag up. And then the other thing is they remove the automatic whistle for shooting the puck when there's a player on a delay, like already. Okay. Like if the player's already in and it's a delay, if you shot the puck on net, it used to be an automatic whistle because they didn't want the opportunity of the puck going in the net. So okay. Now it's not an automatic whistle. It'll essentially just be a delay. Put your arm up until the player can tag up, but then they can release and come back in.
But so just for clarity,
in that situation, it's just like we're eliminating whistles.
Yeah, and just for clarity, if the puck enters the net on that shot, the whistle would blow and it's a wave off and it's a no goal due to the delayed offside, regardless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that wouldn't change. But I guess it's just like an added, you know, a whistle that you didn't need to blow. And some referees, and in my experience, especially in adult league, they weren't calling that anyways. They weren't, if the puck got shot on that and the guy was delayed, they would just like let the play go. So these are some things that I feel like is long overdue that some people were already enforcing kind of on their own. But obviously the big ones is the offside, the icing on the shorthanded, the cameras, I would say is big. The mouthpiece is an interesting one. And we all knew that the neck lacerations were gonna come up. So yeah, those I would say kind of summarizes the main ones.
For the neck guards, that's 18 and younger then, correct? Not in adult league, or is adult league requiring neck guards as well?
It is just the age of 18 and under, yeah. Gotcha. Both for officials and players.
Growing up in Canada, I never understood, you know, the USA hockey of the having the mouth guard but no neck guard. I know in the youth teams that I coached, that was one thing that you can always fix teeth, right? You can't fix if you get hurt, God forbid. But yeah, no, I'm happy to see USA hockey picking that rule up for sure.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. There is one more rule that I forgot to mention, and that would be kneeing. So in the past, knee-on-knee contact, very dangerous, high potential for injury. That used to just be an option for a minor penalty. Now it's mandatory misconduct. So it's at least a 2 and a 10, and it could be a 5 in a game if it's that severe. or a match penalty if it was intentional.
How do you think that's going to be specifically in the higher level and the faster, you know, speed of the games, where I think it was during the Frozen Four in the final, there was a play on the boards where it went to review and, you know, it's an instinct play sometimes when you're getting beat, right? So, you know, the game moves extremely fast and in slow-mo, you can, you know, let's be real. Frame by frame, you can say that this person knew what they were doing. But for someone that's played the game and, you know, someone jukes when you're thinking the other way, you're not trying to hurt the player. You're trying to just slow them down so you don't get beat. What's your feel on that as far as calling it?
I would say specifically with kneeing that there, more often than not, it is a high potential for injury. I think there aren't too many people that are going in saying, like, I'm going to knee this person. It's what it is. It's the guy makes a juke last minute and you just want to get a piece. But anytime you make any type of check with your legs and not with your upper body, that it's not a clean check. So there is no leg on leg contact clean check. Even the one in the World Juniors, I think you mentioned here, that one was weird because it was like almost as if they were both very low and one leg between the other guy's leg. And it was almost like they kind of hit each other and scissored away and like kind of rotated. But anything with the leg, I mean, it stinks because I think some people might get thrown out of games that they don't deserve in the future. But I think there's going to be a higher amount of these game misconducts that are going to play out to be a good thing for USA Hockey, because a leg check is very dangerous and it's very easy. Teams losing 5-1 and a guy sticks out his leg, it'll look intentional even if it's not. And it'll create more problems even when you penalize that one player. So because the game's not over yet and there's a lot more animosity being built up through it. So I think removing the player is the right call. And I think out of 10 times you'll see kneeing, maybe one or two of them might be a kid that maybe didn't deserve it. But for the most part, I think it will be the right call. And now it's going to force those referees to make that call and make sure that that's the only option, that he's at least sitting a period, if not more.
Yeah. And I think to your point too, it's about teaching the game to some extent, right? So you're penalizing that player, whether they fully deserved it, partially deserved it, they're going to learn that they're the way they went into that hit, the way they extended, the way whatever. And if a good ref like yourself is calling that penalty, they're explaining the penalty to the player. I've seen it, you know, countless times where the ref is in the penalty box door talking directly to the player, basically informing them why it was a penalty. What, like you said before, right? Extended your arms, hit him too high, the knee extended, whatever that is. Like, you can't do it because of this. And you're trying to teach the kid so that next time he's growing on that front and he's learning what not to do in the game of hockey to keep himself safe and keep others safe. So I think that's a really important part. But David, man, I think it's been an awesome conversation. So much knowledge. Love the little bit of insight on kind of behind the shield from the Panda Ref here. But where can people find you? As you said, you are a influencer with, what'd you say, millions of followers. Where can people find you on socials and out in the world? Where can they come see you, or how can they get a hold of you if they want their, if their kid wants to learn to ref or whatever, where are you located?
Yeah, we're located in Tampa, Florida here. And I have an LLC under Clean Whistle Officiating. We're on Instagram, Facebook, as well as my own David Benmoka Facebook profile. Right now we're working on getting a website together where we can filter people who want to apply and get this opportunity to register for USA Hockey, but also just get them signed up, see if officiating for them, get them out there on the job training, you know, whether you make a mistake or you're perfect, which no one's perfect, but you know, you go out there, you see if you like it, you enjoy it. And then from there, you take opportunities to try to get better. And, or if it's just one and done, there's a lot of kids that come in one and done. Hey, this isn't for me. I have other interests, other things going on. So, and that's perfectly fine. My hope is that they at least take, you know, hey, maybe I should be respectful to refs, or hey, you know, I get a lot of penalties. Maybe I need to avoid, you know, an injury on for myself or injuring someone else. So at least there's that the respect of the game and checks and balances. Once you get into officiating and try it for the first time, you'll see that it's not so simple and that it is something difficult. And maybe there's a little bit of humility and there's a little bit more empathy when we're speaking to referees. And, you know, it's easy to get tied up in the emotions when something's happening. happening and you want an answer and, hey, referee, why'd you call this? How can you call this? And it's in the middle of the game and that's not the best time to talk to a referee. So when you want that respectful communication, it's going to happen before the game, after the game, between periods, or a stoppage where, you know, there's an opportunity to talk. You know, the best way to get a referee's attention is picking up a puck for an official, showing that kindness first, that gesture. And from there, you can get an open, honest conversation. Some referees don't want it, and that's okay. But other referees, you know, the ones that really care, they're, you know, you'll see it in their approach and their officiating style. So a clean whistle officiating, the Panda Referee on Instagram and, you know, on TikTok as well. So our message is to show kindness and to rebrand how we look at referees. And our goal is to try to develop really high quality referees. But it all starts with the interest and the love in the game, curiosity for the rules. And from there, the people who are going to stick around 3 years, 4 years into it, those are ones that are going to get prioritized opportunities. And it's not a job that make a lot of money and it's one and done. It's something that you got to dedicate time and put hours into. And once you show that you're serious about it, people will then take you seriously.
It's a phenomenal way to give back. It's a phenomenal way to stay, you know, in shape as well. You're out there on the ice and, you know, the higher up you go, the faster you got to skate. Unless you're playing at TBSA at 11 PM, then, you know, you're with the true athletes out there. But no,
yeah.
Definitely appreciate it. Yeah, I've always said walk a mile in someone's shoes before you decide to throw a stone that way. I said the same thing with goaltending. I learned at a young age that I put the pads on one day and realized that, you know, letting 15 in, it's not as easy as what one makes it look. So yeah, I really appreciate you coming on. I wish there were more of you. You know, definitely want to see the younger kids giving back and helping out specifically in the officiating. Because again, like I said at the top, you can't play competitively without refereeing. You know, it's you need it out there. And, you know, for parents listening, that could be your kid out there on the ice in stripes. So remember, you know, the next time you go to yell at the panda, the stripes out there, then just think about that because it could be your kid reffing one day.
Absolutely could. So, gentlemen, appreciate the time. David, again, thank you for joining us in the nest. Appreciate your insight to the game. Appreciate you educating this player, the parent, and the coach on the rules of that are on the books and the new ones that are coming out. Can't wait to have you on again once you get the season started and give us some feedback on what it looks like out there on the ice. But until then, buddy, wish you nothing but the best and best of luck to you this summer and educate the crap out of those kids and those future refs because the sport needs it, buddy. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for allowing me to be on your platform and spreading that knowledge. And, you know, my goal is just to, you know, really bring in the community together and find referees that really want to do, you know, serve the game and leave the ego at home. And those people, I think, deserve all the credit in the world, whether they're pursuing the NHL and officiating or whether they're just showing up to a Sunday beer league game. So, you know, take pride in what you do and love it. And you'll attract some amazing people who will support you along the way. Just know that you're not alone, even when the struggles get tough.
Absolutely. See, Kev, even when you're struggling, you're not alone, buddy. Hey, David says so.
Day in and day out, bud. Struggle is
absolutely
real.
Listen, enjoy the NHL playoffs. Tampa, Florida starts Tuesday night, the 22nd. That's going to be a series. The other ones we spoke on earlier in the show, just going to be a great time. Next time we talk, there'll be some more games under our belt. We'll have more to talk about. Until then, Kev, great job as always. And everybody else, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time in the nest. Cheers.